From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today on the show, imagine taking the reins of a major urban school district smack dab in the middle of a pandemic.
Quite honestly, it was kind of scary. And not scary in the sense of like, oh my gosh, I'm frightened and don't know what to do. But it was a piece of, I want to get this right.
The superintendent of Grand Rapids Public Schools on her first year on the job. Also, how the pandemic is hurting the state's most vulnerable kids.
Any educational inequity that existed in Michigan is likely to have been exacerbated.
Plus, teachers talk about coping with the demands of a digital classroom.
We're all so tired, and it's because we're pouring so much energy into trying to make this space work.
All of that and more coming up today on Stateside. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today on the show, teachers and students have had to adapt to a whole new kind of school this year, and it has not always been easy.
Kids got the laptops and they have the laptops at home. Now they open the laptops and they're getting ready to learn, to realize that they don't know how to learn online. Yes, they're online all the time for entertainment, but they don't have academic experience online.
We'll take a look back at what the pandemic has meant for how we educate our kids. That's later in the show. But first, this year has been a daunting one for every superintendent in Michigan. They've had to make tough choices about remote learning, finding ways to support families struggling with job loss or deaths in the family, and they've had to help teachers totally reinvent their curriculum for the digital classroom. Now imagine if your first day on the job as a super for a major urban district was smack dab in the middle of all this. That was the situation for Ledrian Roby, superintendent of Grand Rapids Public Schools. Dr. Roby, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you, April. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. What was on your mind? You were hired in February, and then you had this time to wrap up your affairs at your last job and get moved to Michigan. What were you thinking as you were watching the lockdown play out in the springtime before taking the reins in July?
So I don't know that I even neatly wrapped up my affairs in Minnesota, because as the pandemic was here, it was, you know, across, of course, our nation. And I was like, oh my gosh, this hopefully, and I remember thinking, you know, very naively, oh, hopefully this will be over and settled by the time July hits. Little, you know, obviously did I know that this was going to be my life and the life of many others. I definitely kept in contact with the team here in Michigan, finding out what they were doing and shared ideas of the things that we were doing and how we were supporting our staff and other things that were taking place. Sharing ideas and then personalizing it for your unique situation, I think, is something that I've learned early on in my career. And it certainly came in handy as I found myself in this kind of new role.
What was it like to take the reins and have to make such a crucial series of decisions in the middle of a pandemic?
Quite honestly, it was kind of scary. And not scary in the sense of like, oh my gosh, like I'm frightened and don't know what to do. But it was a piece of, I want to get this right. I want to do right by the children of Grand Rapids Public Schools. I want to do right by the families and the community. That was my first kind of thought. And then it's like, okay, Ledrian, let's bear down. Let's, you know, keep engaging with the team. Let's figure out how to brainstorm ideas. Let's talk to other people to find out what they're doing. And knowing that the lift was not just mine alone, it was part of the larger community, part of the larger leadership team, helped kind of get me to get my sea leg, so to speak.
What were some early stage decisions you had to make that turned out to be consequential?
The first one would be, are we returning to school? And so, you know, I think back to July, that was probably one of the first questions that I got. You know, school starts at the end of August, and, you know, are we returning to school?
Are we doing this? Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, trying to get, you know, my feet on the ground right away and figure out, is that a really viable option? And then also, you know, having conversations with our community, with our board members, our other leaders within the community to find out what they're doing. We've done so many different town halls. We've done surveys. We were trying to figure out what their comfort level was with returning to to in-person learning at the time. And then once we got a sense of our community wasn't quite ready to go back to in-person learning, the next thing is what resources and what things do we need to have in place for the fall? In March, it was very much let's paperclip and Band-Aid things together to get us through the end of the school year. And in August, we were able to kind of capitalize on some of the successes of the spring and figure out what are the next steps? What is the professional development that needs to be in place? What are the structural systems that need to be in place to ensure that students know, you know, where they're going to be? And then also kind of the technical pieces around how are we doing open houses? How are we doing meet the teacher nights in a virtual format? And so those things kind of fell into place once we made the decision that we weren't quite ready to do in-person learning this fall.
Yeah. And just to state, for folks who may not know, Grand Rapids Public Schools have been fully remote since the start of the school year. Can you think of anything that you know now that you wish you had known in July or maybe even further back at the start of this?
There's probably a lot of stuff that, quite honestly, as I think about it, it's like, okay, what do I know now that I didn't know then? The additional resources, I think, you know, and I don't want to discount, you know, that we knew that the isolation and how do we keep kids connected to school and to their teachers and things is a real issue. But then those other additional resources around socially, how do we keep kids connected to one another? And how do we make sure that they're able to make friends? And so we were more focused on the logistics and kind of the technical pieces and the other pieces around the social emotional needs of our students are important and always have been important, but I don't think that we really tapped into that soon enough.
Are there things that are still keeping you up at night about all this?
Yeah. I worry about learning loss of our young people. Having been a classroom teacher, I understand, you know, and having been a building administrator, I understand and appreciate those first few days of any school year where you're building relationships, you're connecting with kids, you're getting to know kids' names, all of those things. You know, in a classroom, you can look at your kids and see, okay, they're struggling a little bit. Let me pull this small group and work one-on-one with, you know, this small group of three or four. It's harder to do in a virtual structure. And that's not to dismiss the creativity and innovation that I've seen teachers, you know, implement over this time. But the thing that kind of keeps me, you know, bubbles in my stomach, so to speak, is how will kids reflect back on this last year and what things have we not been able to really dig into deep around their learning?
There are so many school districts all around Michigan dealing with missing students right now. They didn't show up for Zoom classes. They didn't show up for face-to-face learning when that was an option. What has this looked like for Grand Rapids?
We've had similar experiences. I think for, again, you know, when this first happened in the spring, people were able to connect with their students a little bit easier because they had 6 months prior in just traditional school, what would be a normal regular school year, you already knew your kids. And so the disadvantage for the fall has been, you know, because we weren't back to normal, a lot of families are like, I did it for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 12 weeks of this, you know, the spring, I'm tapping out. And it's that piece of how do we reengage our kids? We have a plan. We are launching a We Want You Back campaign for those students that we have lost contact with or have never signed up or have engaged with us and we're not quite sure where they have gone, to invite them back to school beginning in January. And I'm hoping that, you know, even if they do not choose Grand Rapids, and I want kids to choose Grand Rapids, of course, but I'm hoping more importantly, if they decide that, you know, nope, Grand Rapids may not be the place for me right now, they still get engaged in some school so that they can be reconnected with their education.
I know that the district just delayed the reopening of face-to-face instruction until mid-January because we're still in the middle of a pretty ferocious COVID spike right now. Can you tell us a little bit about how you made the decision and the kind of things you were weighing and considering?
A lot of it, you know, and nothing lives in a vacuum, of course. It's like we looked at what the data is saying for our county. We are in close communication with our health department, both the state level and at the Kent County Health Department, talking with other superintendents, all of our schools holding parent meetings to find out kind of what is the tolerance of, you know, are we ready to roll back in? And many families were like, yep, our kids need to be back in school. But, you know, you're hearing about the spikes. They talked about the Thanksgiving spike, and our health officials have been warning that we can anticipate that at the top of the year. And so we made the decision, instead of starting right away in January, on January 4th with in-person learning, we would allow that window of time for incubation. If people have traveled to visit other families or have done things socially, that we wouldn't put all of our students and staff in a spot of we're all there together again and have not allowed for the incubation period.
There's a lot of 2020 that you probably want to leave where it is. But what have you learned that you want to bring forward into the new year?
I am one of those people who was always super reflective about, okay, how do we do this better? And, you know, where do we need to get tighter in our structures? And again, with this virtual learning format, I think it has changed the way in which we do school. What I want our community to know is that we're taking all of the lessons learned. And, you know, of course, we want to get back into 100% school, in-person school for all of our students. But also, it provides an opportunity to kind of be really innovative for the future. So if we ever have students with long-term illnesses or other things where they can't physically be on campus, this has provided us an opportunity to continue a child's education and to continue to be engaged with them. For our community, we are so appreciative of the support that the community has provided for all of our young people in Grand Rapids Public Schools and then the broader community. And I just want to say, you know, thank you for that.
Dr. Ledrian Roby is superintendent for Grand Rapids Public Schools. Dr. Roby, real pleasure talking to you. Hope you have a good holiday.
Thank you, and you as well. Look forward to seeing you in 2021.
Coming up, thousands of Michigan students have not shown up for school this year.
Some of those are kindergartners whose parents said, okay, I'm not going to try online learning with my 5-year-old. But a lot of them are students in the upper grades who are just unaccounted for. We don't know where they went.
We'll talk about that and other big education stories of 2020. That's next. Stay with us. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Schools are such an important part of our society's infrastructure. And yet, did we really know how important they are until this year? Nearly everything about education got turned upside down in 2020. Today, we'd like to take stock of what's happened across Michigan's districts over the past 10 months and what the new year might bring to students, parents, and teachers. Joining us today are Matinga Ragatz, an education consultant, former Michigan Teacher of the Year, and a regular education commentator for Stateside. Matinga, welcome back.
Thank you so much, April.
And we're also talking with Kobe Levin, a reporter for Chalkbeat Detroit, who's been keeping an eye on education issues all over the metro region. Hi, Kobe. Nice to hear your voice.
Thanks so much for having me.
Matinga, I remember this conversation that we had in the earliest days of the pandemic where we were talking about the potential of this moment for reinventing what's not working in education. So, we are at the end of the year. Would you say that there was time and bandwidth for innovation in this year?
Those were such good conversations, so optimistic. But we all got the sad but true t-shirt. And no, very little of the innovation that we thought we were going to do happened in most places. But we did discover so many things that we could fix that we were more about fixing than trying to think of new things. So no, a lot of the really cool ideas that were floating around, this just kind of got buried and maybe next year.
Matinga, the teachers and school staffers and families that you've spoken to over the past 10 months, how would you characterize how they're feeling in this moment? I think I can anticipate the answer, but I just want to hear you say.
There are just no words, you know, and December is always survival mode anyway. but now it's compounded. There are so many things that absolutely do not make sense right now that we're trying to survive, that there is no bandwidth for some of the things that we traditionally thought were education staples.
I wanted to get your take on a comment that we found. This is a middle school choir teacher named Tara Cleveland who works in West Michigan. And we asked her about one thing that's changed since the beginning of the pandemic for educators.
If we go back to April, there was a lot of support for teachers and how amazing we are doing for adapting so quickly. Then when we were voicing concerns about the possibility of having to go back to face-to-face, we were vilified and it turned on a dime.
I know that not every region is treating its teachers the same way, but have you heard other educators talk about concerns like that?
Yeah. You know, one of the needs for, I think, administrators that they've had to change, you know, there's a lot of culture that we've built in the last few years about giving teachers more autonomy, helping them feel professional and supported. But all that went out the window when we pivot really fast. And I think a lot of administrators went back to autocracy, top-down decisions, and quick decisions, because you can't make quick decisions when you have too many cooks in the kitchen. So, yeah, I think the support that the teachers had at the beginning have completely and absolutely disappeared, because the teachers are now, they're no longer teaching in their element. They're just following the beat of the drum of whatever administrator has put together.
Kobe Levin, let's talk a little bit about how this pandemic has amplified some of the existing disparities. I know this is a fair amount of the beat that you cover for Chalkbeat. What have you observed this year?
So it's hard to know where to begin. You know, go down the list. Any educational inequity that existed in Michigan is likely to have been exacerbated. That's for a whole range of reasons, between access to the tools that you need to effectively learn online, to the way that we know the pandemic has affected people's lives differently depending on their economic class. If your parents are essential workers who may be super stressed out, working long hours, worrying about the possibility of catching the coronavirus, that's going to be tougher for you than if you've got a parent at home working on their laptop, who may be able to help out with schoolwork between meetings. Some students just did not have a buffer for this. Some did and some didn't. And the ones that didn't, I think what we're hearing more and more calls to be ready, because they're going to need extra support over the next couple of years to ensure that the effects of the pandemic don't stretch on too long for the most vulnerable students.
For sure. It's not the only measure of disparity, but I know that early on, one of the biggest concerns was that there would be a huge technology gap and that some kids either would have their own computers or would have access to solid Wi-Fi or other things that would make online learning easy, and other kids simply wouldn't. And obviously, this is a concern that stretches across urban Michigan and rural Michigan. You've had a chance to look at some attempts at responding to those problems. Could you tell us a little bit about what you saw?
Sure. So there was an all hands on deck effort in the spring to get devices and Wi-Fi hotspots in the hands of students. If there were laptops in the computer lab at school, principals were sending them out to families. Schools were buying laptops. There was a Chromebook shortage across the country. You had philanthropists in Detroit pouring tens of millions of dollars into, ensuring that every child would have a device. And, I think it worked in the sense that many more children have devices than had them before. Now, those problems have not disappeared completely. I talked to a family recently that has five children. And, their school districts didn't provide enough devices for all the children. So that's obviously a hole in the system. And, of course, not all devices are made equal. And, you still hear plenty of reports of technological difficulties. That said, we're going to see a lot more school districts once the dust clears around the pandemic that just have on their hands a whole lot of technology that they can send home with students. We've done a sort of upgrade in that respect in Michigan. Now, whether that necessarily translates to more and better learning, I don't think we can be so sure.
There's no question that there's this whole raft of issues out there in the world now because of virtual and asynchronous learning. But at the same time, we have, through the course of the year, talked to some teachers who've said there are aspects of their students' learning that are actually going really well because of online learning. Matinga, do you think we're going to see districts getting more serious about an appropriate role for online learning, maybe for kids who, you know, either have different kinds of challenges in getting to school or just as an adjunct to what happens in the classroom?
Oh, they would be amiss to just throw away the online component when things kind of fall back to normal. There are a lot of introverted kids who love being online, or extroverted kids who feel like they can focus without the distraction of the classroom. There are some kids who just hated going to school, and school for them was not a friendly place. And now suddenly they can learn online, especially the teenagers and the preteens. They can sleep in. So the whole transportation situation, they don't have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock in the morning. The fact that they can roll out of bed and be in class by 8 o'clock after 10 minutes of, making sure your hair looks good. Just it's a game changer, the fact that you can get that extra half an hour of sleep. So there are so many benefits for some kids to learn online, but there are also some kids who just, this is just not working out. They don't have a good environment at home. They don't have a good connection at home, like Kobe said. And, so we're going to have to definitely juggle and rethink how we can make this work without it being extra work for the teacher, because right now the teachers are basically doing this hybrid model where they're coming to school physically to have a handful of kids, and they also have a handful of kids who have opted to stay home. So now how do you prepare a lesson for the ones that are face to face with you, the ones that choose not to put their cameras on, the ones that have their cameras on? How do you divide them into groups? It's conducting an orchestra, for sure.
If you're just joining us, my guests today are education consultant Matinga Ragatz, a past Michigan Teacher of the Year, and Kobe Levin from Chalkbeat Detroit. Kobe, you recently did a big write-up for Chalkbeat about the thousands of kids who are missing from schools right now. They didn't show up to online classes, did not attend face-to-face, and districts weren't necessarily sure where they are. Can you explain a little bit about what you found about what's happening there?
Sure. So using the latest numbers we have, which are still unaudited, we can see that far fewer students showed up to school, enrolled in school this fall, than we might have expected. Now, some of those are kindergartners whose parents said, okay, I'm not going to try online learning with my five-year-old. And that's something that we've seen across the country. But a lot of them, at least three quarters of them, are students in the upper grades who are just unaccounted for. We don't know where they went. And while superintendents report that some are beginning to trickle back, 50,000 students that's a big number. So the question is, what can and should be done to bring these students back into the fold and just make sure that they have the social services and the educational services that they would normally be getting? Perhaps some families are homeschooling. Perhaps some of the missing students are in private schools. And that's fine. But teachers, who, especially those who work in low-income communities, will tell you some of these students are just falling through the cracks. These are students who may be working during this time, or students who don't want to go to school and whose parents don't have the bandwidth to push them to do that right now. And for those students, you really are looking at a tragic and really challenging loss of learning that could haunt them and haunt us as a society for a long time.
Matinga, what comes to mind when you think about remedial efforts for those kids who did just fall through the cracks this year? I'm sure there's a range of methods that districts have across the state for working with kids who may have missed as much as a year of school, but I mean, this sounds a little beyond what they usually deal with.
Oh, for sure. And I've heard of administrators going door to door. to make sure that they can find all their kids and make sure that they can connect with all of them. But, you know, one of the conversations that I had with a group of teachers was specifically that, you know, we as educators have control of the speed of the learning, the pace of the learning. So we have set a pace that is a traditional pace, but in the pandemic, we have not diminished the pace. We've just watered down the content so the kids can keep with the pace. So there are things that we can do to make sure that the kids do not fall behind, because they're only behind because we tell them they're behind. Teachers are feeling that because they have to keep up this curricular pace, that's when they're losing engagement with the students. But when they're able to meet the student at their pace and meet the needs of the students, especially their social emotional needs, the kids are more likely to come back and become more engaged and thus not fall behind, quote unquote, whatever that means.
I have to wonder, I mean, what if anything, can schools really do about this? I mean, if kids are just saying, you know, I'm not loving the online option, and the parents are like, well, you know, this isn't really something I can help a lot with, too. Is that, Kobe, do you think that's why so many districts are just trying to wait and be patient and see what they can do? I don't really know much about Michigan's truancy laws.
So I will say that other states have even suggested the idea of doing a sort of truancy push to make sure students were learning, and people don't like that.
Yeah, I mean,
it sounds like that would be pretty tough.
It sounds like such a non-starter, given that so many families are dealing with, you know, job losses, grief.
Absolutely.
In some cases.
Absolutely.
But,
so we need to have grace during the pandemic, no doubt about it. But, you know, at the same time, schools do so much for children. They're often a sort of safe harbor for kids, a place where kids can develop and grow. And the idea of so many children just fully checking out from their education, it's a big problem. I mean, and no one's denying, I don't think, that it is a problem worth solving. The folks who've really done the yeoman's work on this are teachers and their local school districts. But, you know, that only goes so far. And what's interesting is that we haven't seen a broader effort, some kind of coordinated effort at the county or even the state level to just get folks thinking together, combining data, and figuring out ways using resources that we already have to at least identify where students might have gone and just slim this 50,000 number down a little bit. That is made more difficult, folks at the state will tell you, by the fact that in Michigan, we do not track homeschooling families. So we have no way to know how many of those 50,000 students are at home homeschooling. And if so, what that means for their education.
Right. So let's talk about, since schools seem to be saying we can afford to wait on some things until the return to the classroom, let's move that conversation forward ourselves. Teachers are expected to be very close in line behind healthcare workers and other essential workers for the COVID-19 vaccine. I want to play a clip from a conversation we had with Detroit Superintendent Dr. Nikolai Vitti earlier this month. Here's what he had to say about vaccinations in his district.
The conversation about the vaccine is going to be very difficult for us in Detroit. Our employees and our parents are going to be very skeptical about the vaccine. And I'm not injecting politics into this. I'm just stating the reality. The reality is a lot of our parents are skeptical about the vaccine because it's connected to a Trump administration. And there's historical distrust with testing in general.
So that's something that would probably not come as news to a lot of folks in Detroit. And we've heard some of these sentiments echoed throughout the state. Matinga, have you heard from teachers about how willing they might be to be vaccinated at this point? Let's start with just the teaching staff and see where that takes us.
You know, that's a question that I actually really wanted to know. And most teachers I spoke to, they are celebrating the fact that there's an end. And most teachers that I spoke to feel like they get vaccinated as an example. And we're not going to move forward if we refuse. Of course, I also talked to most of the teachers that I talked to were teachers from suburbs and from mostly white schools that where there's a different culture around healthcare and especially vaccinations and a different history with that. So they have full trust in the system. And but like the superintendent of the Troy School says, there are historical markers that make certain communities just really distrustful. However, we have seen a lot of the leadership really turn around. We saw the nurse in New York that was the first volunteer to get that vaccine. I think we're looking at different times. And also because of the focus on race that we all kind of experienced this summer, I think people are a lot more, they feel like they're allies now. There are allies out there that people who are not going to be as aloof and as apathetic about the healthcare of BIPOC and you know, like the kids of color and teachers of color. But most of the teachers I spoke to, thumbs up, bring it on, because we want to be an example for our students.
Coming up, we continue our conversation about how 2020 has turned education upside down. And we'll hear from teachers about what this year has been like for them.
A lot of the times, I guess for me personally, it's hard to feel like a teacher most days, because I kind of feel like a telemarketer having to call students who aren't showing up.
Stick around. We'll be right back. You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. We've been talking to education consultant Matenga Ragatz this hour and Chalkbeat Detroit reporter Kobe Levin about 2020's biggest education stories. And as you've been hearing, this year has been anything but normal for Michigan students, their families, and school staff. But the pandemic isn't over yet, and its effects on education are likely to be with us for years. Let's get back into it. Kobe, what's on your mind as you think about what you've heard teachers and superintendents say about what their main challenges are, I guess, for the remainder of this year, but especially going into 2021?
Oh, boy. Where do you start? You know, it's just going to be hugely challenging to win back parents' trust. A big reason that so many districts have, you know, been heavily online this year is because parents just don't feel safe sending their kids to school. So the vaccine obviously plays a key role in that. There will also be, you know, there'll have to be some bridge building, you know, a public effort by school districts and by the community at large to say, you know, we are ready to take the next step out of the pandemic. Now, academically, it's a tough situation. Basically, if a student comes back and, you know, they're a second or third grader who's in the process of learning to read, and the track that they were on, you know, isn't realistic for them anymore. And we're hearing, you know, pretty loud and clear that there's not going to be an extra school year. They're not going to get this time back. And so students really will need extra help if they're going to get to where they would have been had they been in classrooms, you know, throughout the pandemic. And again, that's a manpower problem. That means having enough teachers to work one-on-one with students or in small groups who can really identify their needs and make sure that they have the skills that they need to get them on the right course for their future.
One of the things that's been most fascinating to me about the pandemic is that districts that have engaged in face-to-face learning, to the extent that that's possible under rules from the State Department of Health and Human Services, you know, the lower grades, that a number of them have had trouble keeping their schools open because of staffing issues. It's not to say that the positivity rate in their schools are so high, but some teachers, some staff, some students might get sick, and some just get exposed to people who are sick and thus have to do a two-week quarantine. In fact, I believe Traverse City Schools had to shut down their middle schools recently because of this, because they just had been hit so hard by folks having to stay home and quarantine. I wonder if we're going to be in a situation where, as the vaccine slowly becomes more widely available, this is much more the case. I don't know. Matenga, what do you think?
This is a difficult question because a lot of teachers, especially in inner city schools, were made to come to school every morning and teach to an empty classroom. So they were having to drop off their kids at a different location so that they can come to a school to work in an empty classroom. And this was very stressful to a lot of the teachers. And so teachers started really thinking about a plan B and quitting. And teachers starting to call in for extended leave There's a district that I talked to a couple of teachers where they only had a one-time COVID call so that if they had been exposed, they could call in and say, listen, I've been exposed, so I need to stay home. But that was your one time. So if you get exposed again, well, you've already used up the one time and now you have to use sick time. That kind of stress and that kind of lack of trust and lack of respect for their expertise has turned a lot of teachers away from the profession. A lot of teachers feel like this is not what they signed up for. And a lot of teachers are focusing on their families, family members that may be susceptible and, you know, quitting, which is really, really upsetting because we already had a brain drain before COVID.
Kobe, have you heard anybody on your beat worrying about the staffing issue?
Yeah, and Matinga made several really good points about the sort of workplace concerns that teachers have had. They've felt unsafe at work. There's another dimension here, which is teachers' sense of sort of success and fulfillment. Folks get into teaching because they want to help students, because they want to make a difference, typically. And when you're teaching over Zoom, it's pretty easy to get the sense that, you know, this isn't working that well. And if you look at survey data from teachers across the country in the middle of the pandemic, you see a really alarming number of teachers saying, I feel like what I'm doing at work isn't helping anyone. It's not helping students. That in that metric, the number of teachers who say that they're feeling successful in their jobs is closely tied to teacher turnover and teachers leaving the workforce.
I wanted to play both with. This next voice we're going to hear is from James Kelly, who teaches 9th through 12th grade at Early College Alliance in Ypsilanti. And we asked him about the most important thing in taking care of kids right now. It's kind of long, but let's take a listen.
So I heard on the radio that 75% of young adults have reported increased mental health difficulties since the pandemic began. And I think this underscores or really lays bare a need for our commitment to our students as people. And my hope is that we will realize that the humans in our classes are delicate individuals who deserve to be treated as people and not as data points. Perhaps we'll move away from the over-reliance on standardized tests and move towards a more holistic approach to these students and their needs.
Again, that's teacher James Kelly from Early College Alliance in Ypsilanti. Matinga Ragatz, I got to say, you called this one. I vividly remember you saying that there would be plenty of time to talk about the academic issues of the year, but the number one thing was just to make students feel safe and feel cared for right now. Could you maybe give us a grade on how Michigan's doing in that regard?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I so agree with that teacher because the schools or the teachers that are in schools where the student development is put above the content have students that are thriving. But the teachers who are in schools who are made to just keep going with the content and just don't fall behind and turn in your lesson plans and I got to see this and that are some of the schools that are pushing students out. The students are not dropping out. They're being pushed out. And this is a reckoning, just like we had a racial reckoning about the purpose of school, especially in the age of information. And if we're not in the business of developing these young people, then we are not in the right business. And I agree also that, you know, it sounds very squishy to some people. This is a little bit of kumbaya sitting here talking about the kids' feelings. But if you don't take care of, if you don't plant those seeds, the content that you're going to be sharing with those kids are only going to be beneficial to those kids who have the support at home. Because right now, the way school works is that if you have really good support at home, you have a better likelihood of doing very well in school rather than if you are being taught coping skills to help you mature into a productive human being or a productive adult. It's not squishy. It's not soft skills. It's the new normal where we need to take care of our students, not in coddling them, but teaching them how to cope. in how to build in their own skills, in how to have their own successes, rather than just telling them and patting them in the back and moving them on to the next level. And here's what I would like to really emphasize, that, you know, going back into the new year and the years to come, we're thinking the kids are going to be behind, but there are schools, there are teachers using this time, right, to develop literacy skills, math skills. Let's go back and fix what we, you know, and put you back in the radar, and not so that you're not so very far behind, rather than just plowing forward. And I know that it's just simply easier to just plow forward, finish the curriculum. But here's a thought: just because the kid has heard it doesn't mean he's internalized it. So stop playing that game and be more about the game of developing human beings. I love that he called them humans.
Matinga Ragatz is Stateside's education commentator. We've been talking to her from her home. Matinga, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
And we've also been speaking with Kobe Levin, who's a reporter with Chalkbeat Detroit. Kobe, thanks so much for all your work and all the articles this year. I know this has been a tough one.
It's great to be with you both.
All of us have had to adapt the way that we work in the age of coronavirus. That's especially true for teachers as they adapt to the constant changes and new demands of the pandemic school year. We wanted to let them tell you, in their own words, what it's been like.
I'm Tara Cleveland. I am a middle school choir teacher for grades 6 through 8. So that's 11 through 13-year-olds. My district specifically went 2 weeks remote. And then when we started in person, you know, I expected it to be a fight to get kids to stay in their seats and keep masks on and distance. And actually, they did a great job. I think my behavior issues went to zero, where they could skyrocket because we're all going through global trauma. I just thought it was going to be so bad. And it was okay. It was just okay. It was still kind of scary, but it was okay. Do I feel supported? If we go back to April, there was a lot of support for teachers and how amazing we are doing for adapting so quickly. Then when we were voicing concerns about the possibility of having to go back to face-to-face, we were vilified and it turned on a dime.
Nobody wants to be back in school more than the teachers. And so it really hurts my feelings when people talk about teachers not having the kids' interest at heart. Okay, well, my name is Janine Scott. I am my 17 year teaching math, high school math. And if I had to put it into one word, I'd say it's been overwhelming. There have been students that I have seen probably less than 5 times the whole year. There have been students that have shown up every single day. One of my students, she was like, "You've been on me since school has started." And I decided, I was sitting here thinking, I'm going to try really hard. You know, thank you for not giving up on me, Miss Scott. And since you didn't give up on me, I promise I'm not going to give up on you. So when I talk about roller coasters, I was like, whew, oh gosh, she's not going to give up on him. She's not giving up. You know, I didn't see her for months. So I try to let my kids know that no matter what, I'm not going to give up on them. They're way too valuable. And it breaks my heart when I hear, you know, we hear stuff like one of the kids, we're like, "Are you there? Are you there? Are you there? Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I was trying to calm the baby down. The baby's teething." And I'm thinking to myself, that's right. There are babies at home. There are little kids at home. There are brothers and sisters who need help with their homework. So what do you say as teachers? Like, "You're not paying attention?" Because you can't get mad at a ninth grade student who wasn't paying attention because the baby was fussy because the baby is teething.
So my name is Samantha Sherwalk. I teach for a school called Tinkham Educational Center. It's an alternative high school in Wayne Westland. I teach 9th and 10th grade English. We are completely remote and have been since the start of the year.
The thing I miss the absolute most about being in the classroom is seeing students' faces when they understand something, when they finally have that aha moment and you can see it click. And when everyone has their cameras off or everyone's working asynchronously on their own time, you don't get that. I have a 13-year-old son who is in eighth grade, a 10-year-old son in fifth grade, and then I just had a baby last December, so she's a year. Teaching from home, from my kitchen table, and having to parent and be the only parent at home has been very difficult. I've had to teach figurative language while changing a diaper. My sons are making lunch in the kitchen while I'm at the table, having to mute and unmute and mute and unmute myself as my email is going off. It's pretty chaotic most days. I look forward to her nap time every day because I know at least one of my classes will go smooth sailing without any screaming or crying.
I'm James Kelly. I am an ELA instructor of 9th and 10th graders at the Early College Alliance. That is an alternative high school on the campus of Eastern Michigan University. This is technically my first full year as a classroom teacher. And so I am having to design my own curriculum and administer the class instruction and then, you know, adjust to this whole new normal when I was unaware of the old normal. So there's a huge portion of synchronous, like, lecture style. Unfortunately, it is sort of like an unwieldy monolith where I'm just kind of faced with toggling through those little thumbnails and trying to say, okay, where did that student go? Let me toggle to, you know, page 4 of my Zoom spread. One of the things I've tried to hold on to as a hard and fast rule is establishing and maintaining steady contact with students. It doesn't have to be talking about class slides or class materials. Sometimes we can just talk about, you know, their favorite music. Sometimes I'll just play Phoebe Bridgers in the background and we'll talk about, you know, that record or something like that.
Always people keep asking me, like, how are you and how are you doing this and how do you feel? I'm like, I wish I could pick a more complex word, but it's a lot.
My name is Jessica Matthews. I teach at Carmen Ainsworth High School, which is located in Flint, Michigan. This is my 21st year of teaching, and I'm a high school English teacher. I think the hardest part is the unknown. I don't know if I'm doing things right most of the time. Like, I actually, like, celebrate when I can do things right where I'm like, all right, today I felt like a teacher. I have kids who have lost multiple family members, 3, 4, 5 family members, but you want them to just go to school. I don't think any of us could do it. You know what I mean? Like, I know I would struggle. You know what I mean? So those are my students. I think if I went back to March 12th and looked at myself, I would be like, you are not ready for what's coming. You have no idea the toll the job is about to put on you. But you're needed. And if not you, then who's going to do it? So toughen up. Cry, which I cry a lot, as of now. You got to toughen up. You got to make it work.
The voices you just heard are Jessica Matthews. She teaches English at Carmen Ainsworth High School in Flint, Michigan. James Kelly is an English language arts teacher for 9th and 10th graders at the Early College Alliance in Ypsilanti. Samantha Cherwalk teaches high school English in the Wayne Westland School District. Janine Scott is a math teacher at Davis Aerospace Technical High School in Detroit. And Tara Cleveland is a middle school choir teacher in West Michigan. And that's our show for today. Today's Stateside episode was produced by April Van Buren. Our executive producer is Laura Weber-Davis. Stateside's a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm April Baer. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.